This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Georgia Representative Austin Scott. He's a member of the House Ag Committee. Had a chance to visit recently in Washington, D.C. We'll hear from Representative Austin Scott in just a few moments. First off, soybean crop. What about the latest as far as the progress and development? We turn to Brad Rippey, a meteorologist with USDA in Washington.
Most of the U.S. soybeans blooming by July 30th, 83% is the national number, 5 points ahead of the five-year average, 6 points ahead of this time a year ago. And then we have exactly half of the U.S. soybeans setting pods by July 30th, 3 points ahead of the five-year average, 9 percentage points ahead of last year's 41%.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Austin Scott, represents Georgia's 8th Congressional District. He's a member of the House Ag Committee. All around good guy, too. Great to see you.
Hey, Tony, thank you for that. Glad to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Well, absolutely. We were talking just a moment ago. We've been doing this, I think, about 8 years, and I guess this is really the question. Are you surprised about anything compared to where you were 8 years ago and what you thought Congress would be?
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm very surprised, especially with what happened this past week. In my years here, which is 13 years here, I've never seen Republicans side with the Democrats to take down a procedural vote, a rule, on the floor of the House of Representatives that happened this past week. It's a very small percentage of the Republicans that conducted themselves that way. I think it was 11. It may have been 12 on the final vote, but it's less than 5% of the Republican conference that has voted with the Democrats and kept a piece of legislation from coming to the floor the past week. And what we're here to talk about, if you looked at some of their comments that they made, one of the people in particular said that they wanted to make sure that there was no coalition put together to pass the Farm Bill or the National Defense Authorization Act or our budget propositions. And that simply won't work, Tony. I mean, we've got to have a Farm Bill. 90% of production agriculture is in Republican districts. It's probably it and the NDAA are the two most important pieces of legislation to the people that I represent. And I never dreamed that Republicans from ag districts would think that you could balance the budget of the United States by eliminating the provisions for production agriculture, which account for 0.2% of total federal spending. And so I'm disappointed with what happened this last week. I'm disappointed with comments made by some of my colleagues, which represent, again, a very, very small fraction of the Republican Party. But we have a very small majority. And so when we have Republicans that go out and say that they won't vote for the Farm Bill under any circumstances, that's very disappointing to me. And it means it makes it that much harder for us to get a piece of legislation passed that supports production agriculture.
I want you to rewind the clock. We don't have to go back 8 years, but a year when you had multiple hurricanes come through that absolutely wiped out portions of Georgia. Yep. And it was the safety net that was there to kind of help along. Mm-hmm. But even with the safety net, it didn't make things whole, did it?
That's right. It didn't get anywhere close to whole. We worked together in a bipartisan manner. Congressman Bishop, Sanford Bishop from Georgia's 2nd District, his staff, my staff, we all worked together with other members. And I would remind you, the timber losses alone in Florida were $1 billion. Ultimately, the disaster package was about $3 billion. Nobody was made anywhere close to whole with what we did. But ad hoc disaster relief is not the way to provide a risk management tool for our farmers and our farm families. It takes too long for it to get to them. If they were totally dependent on ad hoc disaster relief, to be honest with you, they would probably be broke before it ever got to them. And so crop insurance and that system is the best thing that we can do for production agriculture, and that at least gives them the cash to make it through until any ad hoc disaster relief may be there. But again, you can't count on ad hoc disaster relief. You know, we need the commodity title. We need the crop insurance title. It accounts for 0.2% of total federal spending. It does tremendous amounts of good for our rural economies and our farm base in this country. And without those two things, I don't think you'll see production agriculture survive into the next generation. You may see corporate agriculture, but you won't see the farm family continuing to be out there doing what they do today, getting on the tractor and taking the risk that they take to grow a crop, to put that crop on the shelves for those of us in this country. The risk will just outweigh what they can handle financially.
You've identified some serious challenges to reauthorization of the 2023 Farm Bill, but it is a process you've got to do. You've got
Absolutely. To
tee that up and then let the dice fall where they may. But as you do, what's part of your focus?
Yeah, so number one, our focus is work, work, work. We're going to outwork the people that are opposed to the Farm Bill. We're going to unite behind GT. On the House Ag Committee. We do have good Republicans from my state. David Scott, Sanford Bishop are two good guys that are on the House Ag Committee. Our hope is that we get a good bipartisan piece of legislation that supports production agriculture out of committee and that we bring it to the floor and that we pass it. And we expect it will be a coalition bill that is fair for the consumer that is dependent upon SNAP benefits. And there are a lot of our fellow brothers that need their SNAP benefits. We did raise the work requirements by 5 years from 49 to 54. We didn't raise it to senior citizen level, as some have said. It's a raise from 49 to 54 on the work requirements if you're going to receive SNAP benefits. And I think that we will get a good piece of legislation through the House of Representatives. It's we got to then get it across the floor of the House of Representatives.
There are 12 titles to that farm bill, and some that we don't normally talk about, but
sure.
There's a trade title in there. There's a rural development title. How important are those, and can they maintain their funding?
Yeah, so this is they're extremely important, especially if you represent rural America as I do. I represent, you know, all or parts of 29 counties. The majority of those counties are rural counties. Without agriculture, you don't have the tax base for a school system or a city or a county in those rural counties. You don't have the tractor dealerships, the car dealerships, or the restaurants. And so in those communities where agriculture is the economy, it is 100% of the economy. Everything else is dependent upon it. So the grants through USDA, all of those things are important, but nothing is as important to me as the crop insurance and the commodity title. Without that, rural America is going to suffer. Over the last couple of years, we've seen the SNAP benefit portion of the Farm Bill move from 65% all the way up to, it looked like it was going to be 85%, and now it's back down to about 81%. So we now have to, whether it be USDA grants, whether it be CRP-type programs or conservation programs, or the commodity support and the crop insurance programs, those things used to get a combined about 35 to 40% of the Farm Bill. Now those things combined are going to get somewhere around 18% of the Farm Bill. And so it is absolutely going to put significant pressure on all aspects of those other titles in the Farm Bill. You take that coupled with the fact that you have some Democrats, not all Democrats, but some Democrats that want to add what they're calling an environmental title to the Farm Bill. And where would they take that money from? They're not going to take it from the SNAP benefits. So they would try to stick another title in there and take more from those things that those of us in rural America actually need. And we need to make it through. We needed to make it through, you know, this year and next year and the following year. So very concerned about the approach of some on the extreme left to it. Very concerned about the approach of some on the extreme right to it. And Tony, we're just going to, you know, we're going to outwork them. We're going to keep going on a daily basis, and we're going to beat them with the truth.
Well, next time I see you, I'm sure you'll have your work gloves. You'll be ready to go. Will you come back and see us?
Absolutely. I'll have my work gloves or my boxing gloves, one or the other on. I mean, but it's you know, we don't expect it to be easy. We didn't expect it to be easy when this year started.
Come back and see us.
We will.
The Honorable Austin Scott, representing the 8th Congressional District of Georgia, member of the House Ag Committee, and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Bart Fisher is co-director of Texas A&M's Ag and Food Policy Center. Talks about a possible extension of the existing farm bill.
What I've heard the chairman say is he has every intention of getting it done, and so I sort of stick with it there. You know, the point I've made is that if we're not going to get new money, though, you know, what's the point of doing it? And so, I mean, I think it's entirely feasible that it could get done this year. Do I think it's going to get done by September? Absolutely not. If y'all think back to the expiration of the 08 bill, do you remember hearing about the dairy cliff in the press? What ended up happening, I mean, the world doesn't fall apart on September 30th. Why? Mainly because we work in crop years on the farm policy side, right? You know, crop year being the year that you harvest. And so plant cotton in the spring, harvest in the fall, all the same. Wheat, you plant one year, harvest the next year. It's the year of harvest that's the crop year. And so September 30th can come and go because the farm bill's already authorized PLC for that crop year. And so what ends up happening, though, you get to the end of the year, you start to get to January 1, policies like dairy that could trigger every single, you know, well, we start to think about wheat, you know, the marketing loan coming up in May or June. Dairy could trigger every single, you know, could trigger every single day. And so that's why you heard about the dairy cliff on January 1. So typically, they can push it all the way to January without the world falling apart. And, I mean, I was hand-wringing and worried about, permanent law kicking in, because we also had folks saying, well, if permanent law kicks in and we eliminate it, how many hundreds of billions can we get credit for saving by eliminating permanent law? So, like, squirrely stuff happens. But I think through the end of the year, you got no problems. And then one last point, and I'll quit belaboring it. Think of when we actually got to the point of signing the 14 Farm Bill. It wasn't signed until President Obama signed it in early February. I think it passed the House late January 29th of 14. There was no extension. We had extended the Farm Bill for a year. We made it all the way to February without the world falling apart. So I think there's quite a bit of runway. Will I be surprised to see it slip into next year? Not at all. It all comes back to that 4-vote margin. Where do they find the 218 in the House? Like everything is around finding 218 votes and navigating that 4-vote margin.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA annual convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, again, Representative Austin Scott from Georgia.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Brad Rippey's with USDA.
We're getting pretty well through the silking stage, so most of the corn has at least entered reproduction. 84% of the U.S. crop by July 30th, 2 points ahead of the five-year average, 7 points ahead of last year's 77%. And then in terms of corn reaching the dough stage, a jump from 16 to 29% during the last week. And that July 30th number is equal to the five-year average and 5 points ahead of last year.
What are the problem states?
Now we see the worst rated corn in the nation again this week in Missouri, 44% of the crop rated very poor to poor. And we see at least 1/6 of the crop rated very poor to poor in four other states, Illinois, Nebraska, Kansas, and Minnesota. You see the common theme there is that those states are generally from the Mississippi Valley westward, where we have seen the driest and hottest conditions so far this growing season.